Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, two experts respond to North Korea's launch of a rocket. Rescue operations continue in quake-hit Tainan, Taiwan. Denver wins Super Bowl 50 over Carolina. And we'll hear about the Academy of Country Music Award nominees.
One of the snubs is that there's no more fan voting. So in the past, the ACMs would ask the fans to determine who would win the Entertainer and New Artist of the Year awards, but not anymore.
It's right here on The Voice of America. Tensions between the two Koreas are high following Sunday's rocket launch by the North, a move banned by UN Security Council resolutions. The South Korean Navy fired warning shots at a North Korea patrol boat that crossed a disputed maritime boundary in the LOC. The North Korean vessel quickly withdrew. Japan's chief cabinet secretary said today Tokyo will consider new measures against Pyongyang after it said it had launched a satellite into orbit. The UN Security Council Sunday condemned the rocket launch and pledged to approve a new resolution to include further significant measures, a UN phrase that likely means new sanctions. Samantha Power is the U.S. UN ambassador.
The DPRK will continue to escalate tensions in the absence of a strong and forceful response from the international community. The accelerated development of North Korea's nuclear and ballistic missile program poses a serious threat to international peace and security, to the peace and security not just of North Korea's neighbors, but the peace and security of the entire world. They are not merely provocations. With each one of these actions, the DPRK moves one step closer to its declared goal of developing nuclear-tipped intercontinental ballistic missiles, and we cannot and will not allow this to happen. So none of us here are for sanctions for sanctions' sake. We're for sanctions to make a difference and to affect the calculus of a regime that has brazenly and recklessly acted in defiance of international norms and in a continual threat to regional and international peace and security. We're looking forward to expeditiously consulting with our colleagues in the coming days, and we will be looking to all council members to unite around a swift and aggressive response to the DPRK's repeated violations that constitute this very direct threat to global peace and security.
The United States condemned the rocket launch as a flagrant violation of UN Security Council resolutions and reaffirmed its ironclad commitment to the defense of South Korea and Japan. The U.S. Joint Space Operations Center said on its website, spacetrack.org, it is tracking two objects in orbit in a nearly polar, sun-synchronous orbit. Bruce Bennett, a RAND Corporation Korea specialist, told VOA's Victor Beatty, North Korean launch represents an advance in technological prowess.
The missile that they launched is one that's got to be put together on a launch pad with cranes and all that sort of thing. So it's not the kind of missile that would be an ICBM that you would plan to use in wartime. Once you started putting it in wartime up on the launch pad, it would get destroyed. It is a missile they could use for a surprise attack, a Pearl Harbor kind of attack, but it's not a wartime kind of missile threat. But the technology they demonstrated suggests that they're getting closer to a real ICBM. We still don't know about a reentry vehicle. We still don't know for sure about whether they've miniaturized nuclear warheads. Those are still some open questions.
Do we know whether or not this was primarily a test of a multi-stage rocket, or did they in fact deploy a satellite, and are they able to communicate with it?
I haven't seen anything yet that suggests that they have been able to communicate with the satellite yet. It was apparently, though, a much bigger satellite. The satellite from the missile launched in 2012 was maybe 100 kilograms, according to the reports I've seen. This one may have been about 500 kilograms, which is far bigger. So if it really is a satellite, if it really does work, that's an advance for them, because this would be a first.
Tufts University Korea expert Sung Yong Lee says this most recent rocket launch represents what he calls a game changer that should prompt Seoul and Washington to impose severe penalties.
North Korea has now enhanced its leverage greatly vis-a-vis Washington and Seoul, and that it's really beyond time for Washington and Seoul to take the North Korea problem and its growing lethality seriously. Over the past 25 years, I would say neither has taken the growing North Korean threat seriously.
Well, both countries now are exploring whether to deploy an advanced missile defense system in South Korea at, quote, the earliest possible date.
Well, that will not change anything. It's something that South Korea should have done 3 years ago instead of hedging and instead of looking at Beijing and see how much they would frown if South Korea did that. South Korea's somewhat juvenile rationale for hedging and for delaying the adoption of this high-altitude missile defense system was that, well, it would irritate the Chinese, and South Korea needs China to rein in North Korea. But history shows that whenever North Korea resorts to a provocation like this, China has acted consistently, utter some rhetorical condemnation, issue a condemnation, occasionally sign on to UN Security Council resolutions purportedly penalizing North Korea, and then behind the scenes keep on giving to North Korea. So that kind of duplicitous action on the part of the Chinese should have been a strong sign that China will not waver in its unconditional support of the North Korean regime until North Korea becomes a serious financial liability or a security threat to China itself. So it's about 3 years late in coming for South Korea to do this. But fundamentally, that the adoption of a missile defense system does not change the equation in South Korea's favor. It does nothing to deter North Korea's continued development of nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles.
Sung-Yung Lee says the U.S. has tremendous financial leverage that can squeeze North Korean entities and Chinese enablers of Pyongyang's weapons of mass destruction program, its cyber criminal activities, and human trafficking efforts out of the U.S.-dominated global financial system. He says the North Korean Sanctions Enforcement Act is working its way through the Senate and gives the authority to do just that. A vote, he says, could come as early as Wednesday. It passed the House of Representatives last month. Continuing with Pyongyang's rocket launch, let's check out what people are saying about it online. International Edition's G. Abby Lee is here to bring us the South Korean public's reaction. Hi. So what's the overriding sentiment response here?
Many South Koreans are demanding more than just words from their own government and the international community. Yonhap News Agency has been reporting throughout the weekend about the rocket launch, and one of the reports is about the UN Security Council unanimously condemning Pyongyang for defying sanctions and launching a rocket. And these are some of the top comments. Please take a proper measure, not just with words, but with action. The second most liked comment was basically an echo of the top comment, and the third comment was a rhetorical question asking, what is the point of these condemnations alone? So it's almost an understatement to say that people are frustrated with what they see as a non-action by the international community.
Yes, especially ironic because the current UN Secretary General is a former South Korean diplomat.
Exactly. The South Korean public is also urging its own leadership to show a stronger stance against the North. Joseon Ilbo is one of the most conservative newspapers in the country and wrote about President Park Geun-hye criticizing the rocket launch as an unacceptable provocation. The most liked comment to that article is, we have heard the word unacceptable numerous times. Please show what you mean with action. Nearly 3,000 people liked it and around 100 people disliked it.
I see. So that's the overriding sentiment in the South. What about some other perspectives on the issue?
Well, the Chinese government's role in dealing with the North is a lot more important than most people realize, so let's talk about that a little bit. Yonhap reported Beijing summoned North Korean ambassador to China, Ji Jae-ryong, to its foreign ministry Saturday. The most liked comment to that article reflects the South Korean public's discontent with Beijing. The comment reads like this. We don't care what you, referring to Beijing, do. You lost our trust. The government should hurry up with the THAAD missile defense system and strengthen our alliance with Washington. Now, what's really interesting is that THAAD, which stands for the U.S.-made Terminal High Altitude Area Defense System, became more or less a household vocabulary in the South. For the longest time, Seoul had a lukewarm attitude to deploying the system because of Beijing's strong dissent, But over the weekend, Seoul embraced the idea.
Okay, so that seems to be the silver lining for Washington and its allies. Thanks for the wrap-up, G. You can follow her on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. And our program's account is at VOA underline IE. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
A new study published in the Nature journal Scientific Reports finds that the behavior of some marine invertebrates who make their home on the seafloor can be affected by the sounds related to human activity. Researchers at England's University of Southampton found that these animals, who play an important role in maintaining marine ecosystems, become less active when exposed to man-made sounds such as those produced by ship traffic or offshore construction activity. Creatures such as langoustines, manila clams, and brittle stars live in burrows they dig in the sediment of the ocean's floor. Creating the burrows and movement into and out of their homes stirs up the seafloor, which is considered vital in recycling nutrients and storing carbon. The researchers say any reduction in the animals' disturbance of the sediment could lead to conditions which could have a negative impact on the area's ecosystem. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
More survivors were pulled from the rubble of a collapsed 17-story apartment building in Taiwan's southwestern city of Tainan, following a 6.4 magnitude earthquake that struck the region early Saturday. At least 37 people died, but more than 100 are still missing. Tainan City Deputy Secretary General Liu Shi-Yang spoke with us from the city's command center midday today.
We are entering into the most difficult period of a rescue operation because as we find out that there could be around 100 people still missing in the crash site. We have successfully rescued over 300 people out of that collapsed building. So right now we're entering into the most difficult part of digging out as many survivors as possible.
There is hope that more will be brought out alive.
That's hope for the best because, like I say, it will be the most difficult time. It's been over 60 hours after the earthquake. So we try to get as many people as possible out of that building. But right now, we found out that perhaps there are some people still buried in the building. We've got 16 rescue teams from all around Taiwan. And the number of rescue experts in the area is up to 500. So I think all those rescue teams, they have been taking turns in terms of doing all those rescue work.
Cranes and other big pieces of equipment are being used in the operation.
Because right now we need to dig deeper, so we need the bigger equipment to do that. And before we are using those bigger equipment, we have already got an agreement with the family, and they agreed that because time is running out in terms of this 72 hours golden time, so we need to break down all those big stones, and in order to get more people out.
We asked if there was any concern about shoddy construction of the building.
The investigation of the structure of the building has also been starting now. We have got people from the construction business to do all this investigation. But right now, the top priority, like I said earlier, is to get as many people as possible to get out of that crash site. The most difficult challenge for us is that we have double-checked the registered people in that building. It's more than 250 households in that building. We have done all the double-check with the names and the list of the family. But the difficult part is that there are also a lot of unregistered people living in that building. And according to our information, there are more than 150 people not registered and live in that building. So right now, we have tried everything possible to get those people out of the building.
Liu Shi-Cheng says even though nearly 10 countries have offered assistance in the rescue effort, Taiwan has the resources on hand to deal with the rescue operation. He says survivors have been placed in local hotels free of charge for 1 week. They are also receiving free meals and counseling. Taiwan's Central Weather Bureau said there have been several aftershocks since the original quake. The quake struck 2 days before the Chinese Lunar New Year celebrations, the most important holiday in the Chinese calendar. Coming Coming up on International Edition, American football has its biggest game of the year and the Country Music Award nominees. The Denver Broncos are winners of Super Bowl 50, defeating the Carolina Panthers 24-10 in the National Football League's championship game Sunday night in Santa Clara, California. VOA's Park Brewer was there and has this report.
Denver relied on its number one ranked defense to stifle the high-powered offense of Carolina and its star quarterback Cam Newton, who a day before had won the NFL's Most Valuable Player Award. But it was Newton's four turnovers, thanks to the Broncos' defense, that proved costly to his Panthers. Denver intercepted two of his passes and forced him to fumble twice with hard hits. Newton's first fumble deep in his own territory in the first quarter resulted in a Denver touchdown. His second came late in the game with the Broncos leading 16-10 and gave them the ball near the Panthers' goal line. Denver scored shortly thereafter to seal the victory. It was the rare Super Bowl where an offensive player did not win the Most Valuable Player Award. That honor went to Denver linebacker Von Miller, who forced one of the fumbles.
It's honestly not about me. I mean, if I could cut this award up and give it to DeMarcus Wilson, all the other guys, that's what I would do. This is our greatest stuff. But for me, you know, I want to be with my guys. I would take the ring. You know, MVP is great, but I take the ring. I want to go in there with my teammates.
Winning his second Super Bowl ring was Peyton Manning, who at age 39 is the oldest quarterback to win the big game. He also became the first to quarterback different teams to the championship. He won with the Indianapolis Colts in 2007. Park Brewer, VOA News, Santa Clara, California.
This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
The Academy of Country Music Awards, also known as the ACM Awards, is one of the most beloved ceremonies in country music. Recently, the organization announced its ACM nominations for this year's awards show, and it has many in country music both surprised and disappointed. VOA Music's Nikki Strong joins International Edition's Sarah Williams to fill us in.
So, Nikki, what are some of the surprises or snubs?
Okay, well, I think a great surprise is Joey and Rory. Now, their journey in the fight against cancer that they have so openly shared with us has had many of us riveted. It's touched our souls. It's inspired much of their music. So to see their work being acknowledged, even as Joey is in hospice, is very heartwarming. One of the snubs is that there's no more fan voting. So in the past, the ACMs would ask the fans to determine who would win the Entertainer and New Artist of the Year awards, but not anymore. Now it's only the industry. And country fans voting for those categories is part of what made the ACMs distinctive and different from other award shows. So now country music fans are snubbed. So we're not part of that process anymore.
Well, I understand Blake Shelton wasn't nominated for anything.
I know, not one thing. This was really crazy. So Blake Shelton is the most high-profile country artist, number one. He is a consistent hit maker. He's always charting, and he's just one of country music's favorite vocalists. And he usually hosts the actual show.
Oh.
So this year, he's not hosting. Now, is there a connection there? I really don't think so. Some people have speculated that, you know, people don't appreciate that he dated Gwen Stefani so soon after his divorce from Miranda Lambert. I don't think that's the case as well, but I think it is fair to say that he could have at least been nominated for Male Vocalist of the Year. He has responded to the snub, and he said that he's just happy to have the night off for a change. He doesn't have to be there to win, and he doesn't have to be there to work. So
he doesn't have to get dressed up.
Exactly.
Well, how did the women fare?
Okay, now this is interesting. It's nice to see Jenna Kramer and Kelsey Ballerini. They're relative newcomers, but they've both had chart success, and they are nominated in the category Female Vocalist of the Year. So that's nice to see. But one humongous disappointment were that there were no women nominated for Album of the Year. Now, this is crazy because both Kacey Musgraves, Pageant Material, and Ashley Monroe's The Blade were highly regarded by critics. These are great projects. And both of them have been nominated for Grammys in this category, Best Country Album of the Year, but totally ignored by that category in the ACM. So that's really kind of crazy.
Well, speaking of Grammys, they're right around the corner. Any predictions?
I think Chris Stapleton is going to be a big winner. I hope Kacey Musgraves or Ashley Monroe snag one for Album of the Year. I hope. And it would be sweet, I think, if Joey and Rory win in Best Country Duo or Group Performance category. And it would be just in time for their new CD, Hymns, which will be released February 12th.
Thank you, Nikki. The Academy of Country Music Awards air live April 3rd at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on CBS. You can hear music from the aforementioned artists and more on Country Hits USA with Nikki Strong on VOA 1. You can also reach Nikki on social media at VOA Music on Facebook and VOA _ Music on Twitter. Thanks a lot, Nikki.
Thank you.
If I needed you, would you come to me? Would you come to me for to ease my pain? If you needed me, I would come to you. I would swim the sea for to ease your pain.
If you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner, then scroll on down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. government, through the U.S. Agency for International Development, recently contributed $20 million to support the provision of food to approximately 1.2 million temporarily displaced persons of the federally administered tribal areas. 75,000 earthquake-affected individuals and 153,500 malnourished women and children in Pakistan. This new contribution by the United States will be managed by the United Nations World Food Program, or WFP, which will mill approximately 40,000 metric tons of wheat provided by the government of Pakistan into fortified wheat flour. In addition, the WFP will purchase and distribute more than 9,000 tons of specialized food commodities to these groups. USAID's $20 million donation is a contribution to the Twinning Program, a partnership among the government of Pakistan, the WFP, and the international donor community. Through the Twinning Program, wheat donated by the government of Pakistan is milled into fortified wheat flour and distributed to vulnerable displaced populations in Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province and the federally administered tribal areas. Donor funds are used to cover the costs of milling, fortification, storage, transportation, and distribution of the flour. USAID is the largest international donor to the Twinning Program, and with this latest contribution has now reached $75 million in total support to the program since 2013. The U.S. government is helping Pakistan to improve access to safe and nutritious food for women, men, and children who are vulnerable to malnutrition, USAID Mission Director John Groark said. The United States has a long-standing commitment to working with Pakistan to provide humanitarian assistance and support human development.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.